The ones who warned Kel'Thuzad in the first place suspected what was going on. Arthas couldn't possibly have known. He's feeling the weight of the crown for the first time, Uther said quietly. He's never had to before. This is all part of it, my lady. Part of learning how to rule wisely and well. I watched Terranus struggle with the same thing when he was a young man. Both good men. Both wanting to do the right things for their people. To keep them safe and happy. His eyes were thoughtful as he watched Arthas fade into the distance. But sometimes the only decision is which is the lesser evil. Sometimes there's no way to fix everything. Arthas is learning that.
I think I understand, but I can't let him just charge off by himself.
No, no. Once I get the men ready for a long march, we'll be on his trail. You should rest up, too. Jaina shook her head.
No, he shouldn't be alone.
Lady Proudmore, if I may, Uther said slowly. It might be good to let him clear his head. Follow him if you must, but give him a little time to think. His meaning was obvious. She didn't like it, but she agreed with him. Arthas was distraught. He was feeling angry and impotent, and wasn't in a state to be reasoned with. And it was precisely for those reasons she couldn't let him be, really, alone.
All right, she said.
She mounted up and murmured the spell. She saw Uther grin as he suddenly realized he could no longer see her. I'll follow him. Come as soon as your men are ready. She would not follow him too closely. She was invisible, but not silent. Jaina squeezed her horse with her knees into a canter to pursue the bright, brooding prince of Lordaeron. Arthas kicked the horse hard, angry that it was not going faster, angry that it was not invincible, angry that he had not figured out what was going on in time to stop it. It was almost overwhelming. His father had had to deal with orcs, creatures from another world flooding into their own, brutal and violent and bent on conquest. That seemed like child's play to Arthas now. How would his father and the Alliance have fared against this, a plague that not only killed people, but in a sick twist that only a deranged mind would find amusing, animated their corpses to fight their own friends and families? Would Terranus have done any better? One moment, Arthas thought he would have, that Terranus would have figured out the puzzle in time to stop it, to save the innocent. And the next, he rationalized that no one could have done so. Terranus would have been as helpless as he in the face of this horror. So deep in thought was he that he almost didn't see the man standing in the road, and it was with a sharp, startled yank that he pulled his mount to the side just in time. Chagrined, worried, and furious at being made so, Arthas snapped, "Fool! What are you doing? I could have run you down." The man was unlike any Arthas had ever seen before, and yet he struck the youth as somewhat familiar. Tall, broad-shouldered, he wore a cloak that seemed to be made entirely out of shiny black feathers. His features were shadowed by the cowl, but his eyes were bright as they peered up at Arthas. A beard streaked with gray parted, revealing a white smile. "You would not have harmed me, and I required your attention," he said, his voice deep and mild. "I spoke to your father, young one. He would not hear me. Now I come to you." He bowed, and Arthas frowned. It seemed to be mocking. "We must talk." Arthas snorted. Now he knew why this mysterious, dramatically clad stranger seemed so familiar. He was some kind of mystic, a self-styled prophet, Terranus had said, able to transform into a bird. He'd had the gall to come right into Terranus's own throne room with some kind of doomsday blather. "I have no time for this.
Arthas growled, gathering up his horse's reins. Listen to me, boy. There was no mocking note in the stranger's voice now. His voice cracked like a whip, and despite himself, Arthas listened. This land is lost. The shadow has already fallen, and nothing you do will deter it. If you truly wish to save your people, lead them across the sea, to the west. Arthas almost laughed. His father had been right. This was a madman. Flee. My place is here, and my only course is to defend my people. I will not abandon them to this hideous existence. I will find the one behind this and destroy him. You're a fool if you think otherwise. A fool, am I? I suppose I am. To think the son would be wiser than the father. The bright eyes looked troubled. Your choice is already made. You will not be swayed by one who sees farther than you. I've only your word that you see farther. I know what I see, and what I have seen, and that is that my people need me here. The prophet smiled now sadly. It is not only with our eyes that we see, Prince Arthas. It is with our wisdom and our hearts. I will leave you one final prediction. Just remember, the harder you strive to slay your enemies, the faster you'll deliver your people into their hands. Arthas opened his mouth for a furious retort, but at that instant, the stranger's shape shifted. The cloak seemed to close about him like a second skin. Wings, jet black and glossy, sprouted from his body even as he shrank to the size of an ordinary raven. With a final harsh caw that sounded frustrated to Arthas, the bird that had been a man leaped into the air, wheeled once, and flew off. He watched it go, vaguely troubled. The man had seemed so certain. I'm sorry for concealing myself, Arthas. Jaina's voice, coming out of nowhere. Startled, Arthas whipped his head around, trying to find her. She materialized in front of him, looking contrite. I just wanted to. Don't say it. He saw her start in surprise, saw those blue eyes widen, and instantly regretted snapping at her. But she shouldn't have sneaked up on him like this, spied on him like this. He came to Antonidas too, she said after a moment, doggedly continuing with what she had intended to say, despite his reprimand. I have to say that I sensed tremendous power about him, Arthas. She rode closer to him, peering up at him. This plague of the undead. Nothing like this has ever been seen before in the history of the world. It's not just another battle, or another war. It's something much bigger and darker than that. And maybe you can't use the same tactics to win. Maybe he's right. Maybe he can see things we can't. Maybe he does know what will happen. He turned away from her, grinding his teeth. Maybe. Or maybe he's some ally of this Mal'Ganis. Or maybe he's just some crazy hermit. Nothing he can say will make me abandon my homeland, Jaina. I don't care if that madman has seen the future. Let's go. They rode in silence for a moment. Then Jaina said quietly, Uther will be following. He just needed some extra time to prepare the men. Arthas stared straight ahead, still fuming. Jaina tried again. Arthas, you shouldn't... I am sick of people trying to tell me what I should and shouldn't do. The words burst from him, startling himself as much as Jaina. What's going on here is beyond horrible, Jaina. I can't even find words to describe it. And I'm doing everything I possibly can. If you're not going to support my decisions, then maybe you don't belong here. He eyed her, his expression softening. You look so tired, Jaina. Maybe you should go back. She shook her head, staring straight ahead, not meeting his gaze. You need me here. I can help. The anger bled away from him, and he reached for her hand, closing fingers encased in metal over hers gently. I shouldn't have spoken to you like that, and I'm sorry. I'm glad you're here. I'm always glad of your company. He bent and kissed her hand. Color came to her cheeks, and she smiled at him, the furrow in her brow increasing. Dear Arthas, she said softly. He squeezed her hand and let it go. They rode hard the rest of the day, not speaking much, and halted to make camp as the sun was going down. Both of them were too weary to hunt for any fresh meat, so they simply took out some dried meat, apples, and bread. Arthas stared at the loaf in his hand. From the ovens of the palace, baked with grain grown locally, not from Anderhal. It was wholesome fare, nourishing and delicious, smelling yeasty and good, and not sickly sweet. A simple, basic food. Something that everyone, anyone, should be able to eat without fear. His throat suddenly closed up, and he placed the bread down, unable to eat a bite, and he put his head in his hands. For a moment, he felt overwhelmed, as if a tidal wave of despair and helplessness washed over him. Then Jaina was there, kneeling beside him, resting her head on his shoulder, while he struggled to compose himself. She said nothing. She did not need to. Her simple, supportive presence was all he needed. Then, with a deep sigh, he turned to her and took her in his arms. She responded, kissing him deeply, needing comfort and reassurance from him as much as he did from her. Arthas ran his hands through her silky golden hair and breathed her scent. And for a few brief hours that night, they permitted themselves to be lost in each other, pushing away thoughts of death and horror and plagued grain. And profits and choices, their world narrow and tender, and comprised only of the two of them. Chapter 12. Still half asleep, Jaina awoke and reached out a hand for Arthas. He was not there. Blinking, she sat up. He was already awake and dressed, cooking some sort of hot cereal for them. He smiled when he saw her. But it didn't reach his eyes. Jaina tentatively returned the smile and reached for her robe, slipping it on and combing her hair with her fingers. There's something I learned, Arthas said without preamble. Last night, I didn't want to mention it, but you need to know. His voice was flat, and Jaina felt something inside her quail. At least he wasn't screaming like he had been yesterday, but somehow this was worse. He ladled up a bowl of steaming grains and brought it over to her. She spooned it automatically into her mouth as he continued to speak. This plague, the undead? He took a deep breath. We knew that the grain was plagued. We knew that it killed people. But it's worse than that, Jaina. It doesn't just kill them. The words seemed to catch in his throat. Jaina sat there for a moment as understanding dawned. She thought she'd throw up the grains she'd just eaten. Her breath seemed to come with difficulty. It turns them somehow. It makes them into the undead. Doesn't it? Please tell me I'm wrong, Arthas. He didn't. Instead, he nodded his golden head. That's why there were so many of them so quickly. The grain reached Hearthglen a short time ago, long enough to be milled into flour and baked into bread. Jaina stared at him. The implications of this. She couldn't even wrap her mind around them. That's why I rushed off yesterday. I knew I couldn't take Mal'Ganis by myself, but, Jaina, I just couldn't sit around and mend armor and make camp, you know? She nodded dumbly. She did understand now. And that prophet, I don't care how powerful you think he is. I can't just leave and let all of Lordaeron turn into this Mal'Ganis, whatever, whomever he is, has got to be stopped. We've got to find every last crate of this plagued grain and destroy it. The telling of this shocking information seemed to agitate Arthas again, and he got to his feet, pacing. Where the hell is Uther? He said. He had all night to ride here. Jaina placed aside the half-eaten cereal, got to her feet, and finished dressing. Her mind was working 1,000 miles a minute, trying to comprehend the situation fully and dispassionately, trying to think of some way to combat it. Wordlessly, they broke camp and headed for Strathholm. The ashy grayness of dawn only darkened as the clouds closed off the sun. Rain began to fall, chilly and stinging. Both Arthas and Jaina flipped the hoods of their cloaks up, but that did little to keep Jaina dry, and she was shivering by the time they reached the gates of the great city. Almost as they drew rein, Jaina heard sounds behind her and turned to see Uther and his men coming up the dirt road that was now almost pure mud. By this point, Arthas had worked himself up again, and he turned to Uther with a bitter grin. "Glad you could make it, Uther," he snapped. Uther was a patient man, but he lost his temper now. Arthas and Jaina were not the only ones under strain. "Watch your tone with me, boy. You may be the prince, but I'm still your superior as a paladin." "As if I could forget," Arthas retorted. He moved quickly to the top of a rise, so he could look over the walls and into the city. He didn't know what he was looking for. Signs of life, of normalcy, perhaps. Signs that they'd gotten here in time. Anything to give him hope that he could still somehow do something. "Listen, Uther. There's something about the plague you should know. The grain." The wind shifted as he spoke, and the scent that reached his nostrils was not an unpleasant one. Nonetheless, Arthas felt as though he'd been punched in the gut. The smell, the strange, unique scent of bread baked with the tainted grain, unmistakable on the air damp with rain. Light, no. Already milled, already baked, already. The blood drained from Arthas's face. His eyes widened, staring starkly in horrified comprehension. "We're too late. We're too damned late. The grain. These people." He tried again. "These people have all been infected." "Arthas," Jaina began in a low voice. "They may look fine now, but it's just a matter of time before they turn into the undead." "What?" cried Uther. "Lad, have you gone insane?" "No," Jaina said. "He's right. If they've eaten the grain, they're infected. And if they're infected, they'll turn." She was thinking furiously. There had to be something they could do. Antonidas once told her, if a thing is magical in origin, then magic can combat it. If they just had a little time to think, if they could calm down and react from logic and not emotion, perhaps a cure could... "This entire city must be purged." Arthas' statement was blunt and brutal. Jaina blinked. Surely he hadn't meant that. "How can you even consider that?" Uther cried, marching up to his former student. "There's got to be some other way. This isn't a blighted apple crop, this is a city full of human beings." "Damn it, Uther, we have to do it." Arthas shoved his face within an inch of Uther's, and for a dreadful moment, Jaina was convinced they'd draw weapons on each other. "Arthas, no, we can't do that." The words left her lips before she could stop them. He whirled on her, his sea-colored eyes now stormy with anger and hurt and despair. She realized immediately that he truly thought this was the only option, the only way to save other uncorrupted lives, was to sacrifice these cursed ones, these that could no longer be salvaged. His face softened slightly as she rushed on, trying to get the words out before he could interrupt her. "Listen to me. We don't know how many people are infected. Some of them might not have eaten any of the grain at all. Others might not have eaten a lethal dose. We don't even know what a lethal dose is yet. We know so little. We can't just slaughter them like animals out of our own fear." It was the wrong thing to say, and she watched as Arthas's face closed up. "I'm trying to protect the innocent, Gina. That's what I swore to do. They are innocent. They're victims. They didn't ask for this. Arthas, there are children in there. We don't know if it affects them. There's too much unknown for such a drastic solution." "What of those who are infected?" he asked, with a sudden, frightening quiet. "They'll kill those children, Gina. They'll try to kill us, and spread out from here and keep killing. They're going to die regardless, and when they rise, they'll do things that in life they would never, ever have wanted to do. What would you choose, Jaina?" She hadn't expected that. She looked from Arthas to Urthur, then back again.
I don't know."
"Yes, you do." He was right, and, despairingly, she knew it. "Wouldn't you rather die now than die from this plague? Die a clean death, as a thinking, living human being, rather than be raised as an undead to attack everyone, everything you loved in life?"
Her face crumpled.
That would be my personal choice, yes. But we can't make that choice for them. Don't you see?"
He shook his head.
"No, I don't see. We need to purge the city before any of them have a chance to escape and spread the contagion. Before any of them turn. It's a kindness, and it's the only solution to stop this plague right here, right now, dead in its tracks. And that is exactly what I intend to do." Tears of anguish burned in Jaina's eyes.
"Arthas, give me a little time, just a day or two. I can teleport back to Antonidas, and we can call an emergency meeting. Maybe we can figure out some way to—"
"We don't have a day or two."
The words exploded from Arthas.
"Jaina, this affects people within hours, maybe minutes. I saw it at Hearthglen. There's no time for deliberation or discussion. We have to act now, or it will be too late."
He turned to Uther, dismissing Jaina.
"As your future king, I order you to purge this city. You're not my king yet, boy. Nor would I obey that command, even if you were."
The silence that fell crackled with tension.
"Arthas, beloved, best friend, please don't do this."
"Then I must consider this an act of treason." Arthas's voice was cold, clipped. If he had struck her across the face, Jaina could not have been more shocked.
"Treason!" Uther spluttered. "Have you lost your mind, Arthas?"
"Have I? Lord Uther, by my right of succession and the sovereignty of my crown, I hereby relieve you of your command and suspend your paladins from service."
"Arthas!" Jaina yelped, her tongue freed in her shock. "You can't just—"
He whirled on her furiously and spat,
"It's done."
She stared at him. He turned to look at his men, who had stood by silent and wary, as the argument had progressed.
"Those of you who have the will to save this land, follow me. The rest of you, get out of my sight."
Jaina felt sick and dizzy. He was really going to do this. He was going to march into Stratholme,
and cut down every living man, woman, and child within its walls. She swayed and clutched the reins of her horse. It lowered its head and whickered at her, blowing warm breath from its soft muzzle across her cheek. She was fiercely envious of its ignorance. She wondered if Uther would attack his former pupil. But he was bound by an oath to serve his prince, even if he had been relieved of command. She saw the tendons on his neck stand out like cords, could almost hear him gritting his teeth. But he did not attack his liege. Loyalty, however, did not still his tongue. "You've just crossed a terrible threshold, Arthas." Arthas looked at him a moment longer, then shrugged. He turned to Jaina, his eyes searching hers, and for a moment, just a moment, he looked like himself, earnest, young, a little scared. "Jaina?" The single word was so much more. It was both question and plea. Even as she stared at him, frozen like the bird before the snake, he reached out a gauntleted hand to her. She stared at it for a moment, thinking of all the times that hand had clasped hers warmly, had caressed her, had been lain on the wounded and glowed with healing light. She could not take that hand. "I'm sorry, Arthas. I can't watch you do this." There was no mask on his face now, no merciful coldness to shutter his pain away from her. Shocked disbelief radiated from him. She couldn't bear to look at him anymore. Gulping, her eyes filled with tears, Jaina turned away to find Uther regarding her with compassion and approval. He held out his hand to help her mount, and she was grateful for his steadiness and composure. Jaina was shaking badly, and clung to her horse as Uther mounted and, holding her horse's reins, led them both away from the greatest horror they had yet encountered in this whole dreadful ordeal. "Jaina?" Arthas's voice followed her. She closed her eyes, tears slipping from beneath closed lids. "I'm sorry," she whispered again. "I'm so sorry." "Jaina? Jaina!" She had turned her back on him. He couldn't believe it. For a long moment, he simply stared, dumbfounded, at her retreating figure. How could she abandon him like this? She knew him. She knew him better than anyone else in the world had known him, better maybe than he knew himself. She had always understood him. His mind suddenly went back to the night they had become lovers, bathed first in the orange glow of the wicker man's fire, and later the cool blue of moonlight. He'd held her to him, pleading. "Don't deny me, Jaina. Don't ever deny me. Please." "I never would, Arthas. Never." Oh yes, powerful words, whispered in a powerful moment. But now when it really counted, she had done exactly that. Denied him and betrayed him. Damn it, she'd even agreed that if it were her, she'd want to be killed outright before the plague came and twisted her into a violation of everything good and true and natural. She'd left him alone. If she'd stabbed him in the gut, he didn't think he could hurt worse. The thought came, brief and bright and sharp. Was she right? No, she couldn't be. Because if she was right, then he was about to become a mass murderer. And he knew that wasn't who he was. He knew it. He shook off the dazed horror, licking lips suddenly gone dry, and took a deep breath. Some of the men had departed with Uther. A lot of them. Too many. Truth be told. Could he even take the city with this view? "Sir, if I may," Falric said, "I'm, well, I would rather be hacked into 1,000 pieces than turn into one of them undead.
There were murmurs of agreement, and Arthas's heart lifted. He grasped his hammer.
There is no pleasure in what we do here, he said. Only grim necessity. Only the need to halt the plague here and now, with the fewest casualties possible. Those within these walls are already dead. We know it, even if they do not. And we must kill them quickly and cleanly, before the plague does it for us.
He looked at each of them in turn, these men who had not shirked their duty.
They must be slain, and their homes destroyed, lest the dwellings become shelter for those whom we are too late to save.
The men nodded their understanding, gripping their own weapons.
This is not a great and glorious battle. It is going to be ugly and painful, and I regret its necessity with my whole heart. But it is with my whole heart that I know we must do this.
He lifted his hammer.
For the light, he cried, and in answer his men roared and lifted their weapons. He turned to the gate, took a deep breath, and charged in.
The ones that had risen were easy. They were the enemy, human no longer, but vile caricatures of what they had once been in life. And smashing their skulls or slicing their heads off was no more of a hardship than putting down a rabid beast. The others. They looked up at the armed men, at their prince, in first confusion and then in terror. At first, most of them didn't even reach for weapons. They knew the tabards, knew that the men who had come to kill them were supposed to be protecting them. They simply could not grasp why they were dying. Pain clenched Arthas's heart at the first one he struck down. A youth, barely out of puberty, who gazed up at him with incomprehension in his brown eyes, and got out the words,
"My lord, why are—"
before Arthas cried out, as much in anguish at what he was being forced to do as anything else, and caved the boy's chest in with a hammer that he absently realized was no longer radiant with the light. Perhaps the light, too, grieved the dire necessity of its actions. A sob ripped through him, and he bit it back, willed it back, and turned to the boy's mother. He thought it would get easier. It didn't. It just got worse. Arthas refused to yield. The men looked to him for an example. If he wavered, they would too, and then Mal'Ganis would triumph. So he kept his helm on so they would not see his face, and himself lit the torches that burned down the buildings full of screaming people locked inside, and refused to let the horrible sights and sounds slow him. It was a relief when some of the citizens of Stratholme began to fight back. Then the self-defense instinct kicked in. They still did not have a chance against professional soldiers and a trained paladin, but it mitigated that horrible sensation of, well, as Jaina had said, slaughtering them like farm animals.
I've been waiting for you, young prince.
The voice was deep and shivered in his mind as well as his ears, resonant and, there was no other word for it, evil. A dreadlord,
Kel'Thuzad had said.
A dark name for a dark being.
I am Mal'Ganis.
Something like joy shot through Arthas. He was vindicated. Mal'Ganis was here. He was behind the plague. And even as Arthas's men, who also heard the voice, turned and sought the source, the doors of a house where villagers had been hiding was flung open, and walking corpses hastened out, their bodies limned by a green, sickly glow.
As you can see, your people are now mine. I will now turn this city household by household until the flame of life has been snuffed out.
forever.
Mal'Ganis laughed. The sound was unsettling, deep and raw and dark.
I won't allow it, Mal'Ganis, Arthas cried. His heart swelled with the rightness of what he was doing. Better that these people die by my hand than serve as your slaves in death.
More laughter, and then the disturbing presence was gone as swiftly as it had come, and Arthas was busy battling for his very life as a throng of undead, three deep, charged him. How long it took to slaughter every living and dead person in the city, Arthas would never be able to tell. But at last, it was done. He was exhausted, shaking, nauseated by the smell of blood, smoke, and the sick, sweet scent of poisoned bread, hanging in the air, even though the bakery itself was a burning building. Blood and ichor covered his once bright armor. But he was not done. He waited for what he knew would come, and sure enough, a mere moment later, his enemy arrived, descending from the air to land on the roof of one of the few buildings still intact. Arthas staggered. The creature was enormous. His skin was blue-gray like animated stone. Horns curved forward and up from his bald skull, and two mighty wings like those of bats stretched out behind him like living shadows. His legs, encased in metal adorned with spikes and decorated with disturbing images of bones and skulls, curved backward and ended in hooves, and the very light of his glowing green eyes revealed sharp teeth bared in an arrogant sneer. He stared up at the creature, rapt with horror, disbelief warring with the evidence before his eyes. He had heard tales, had seen pictures in old books, both in the library at home and in the Dalaran archives. But beholding this monstrous thing towering over him, the sky behind him crimson and black with fire and smoke, a dreadlord was a demon, a thing out of myth. It couldn't be real. And yet it was here, standing before him in all its dreadful glory. Dreadlord. Fear threatened to overwhelm Arthas, and he knew if he let it, it would cripple him. He would die at the hand of this monster, die without even a fight. And so with sheer will, he drowned out the mindless terror with another, better emotion. Hatred. Righteous fury. He thought of those who had fallen beneath his hammer, the living and the dead, the ravening ghouls, and the terrified women and children who didn't understand that he was trying to save their souls. Their faces bolstered him. They could not, would not, have died for nothing. Somehow Arthas found the courage to meet the demon stare for stare, clutching his hammer. "We're going to finish this, right now, Mal'Ganis," he shouted. His voice was strong and firm. "Just you and me." The dreadlord threw back his head and laughed. "Brave words," he rumbled. "Unfortunately for you, it won't end here." Mal'Ganis grinned, black lips pulling back from sharp pointed teeth. "Your journey has just begun, young prince." He swept an arm out, indicating Arthas's men, long, sharp claws glittering in the light of the flames that still burned and consumed the great city. "Gather your forces and meet me in the Arctic land of Northrend. It is there that your true destiny will unfold."
"My true destiny?" Arthas's voice cracked with anger and confusion. "What do you—"
The words died in his throat as the air around Mal'Ganis began to shimmer and whirl in a familiar pattern.
"No!" Arthas shrieked.
He surged forward, blindly, recklessly, and would have been cut down in a heartbeat had not the teleportation spell been completed. Arthas cried out incoherently, swinging his faintly glowing hammer at empty air.
I'll hunt you down to the ends of the earth if I have to. Do you hear me? To the ends of the earth!
Manic, raging, screaming, he swung his hammer wildly at nothing until sheer exhaustion alone forced him to lower it. He propped it up and leaned on it, sweating, shaking with raw sobs of frustration and anger. To the ends of the earth. Chapter 13. 3 days later, Lady Jinna Proudmore walked the streets of what had once been a proud city, the glory of northern Lordaeron. Now, it was the stuff of nightmares. The stench was almost unbearable. She lifted a handkerchief, liberally scented with peace bloom essence, to her face in a partially successful attempt to filter out the worst of it. Fires that ought to have consumed themselves, or have abated at least slightly from lack of fuel, continued to rage at their full height, telling Jaina that some dark magic was afoot. Combined with the acrid smell of smoke that stung her eyes and throat was the reek of putrefaction. They lay as they had fallen, most of them unarmed. Tears welled in Jaina's eyes and slipped down her cheeks as she moved as if in a trance, carefully stepping over the bloated bodies. A soft whimper of pain escaped as she saw that Arthas and his men, in their misguided mercy, had not even spared the children. Would these bodies, lying still and stiff in death, have risen to attack her if Arthas had not slain them? Perhaps. Many of them, certainly. The grain had, indeed, been distributed and consumed. But every single one? She would never know, nor would he.
Jaina, I ask you again, come with me.
His voice was intense, but it was clear his mind was 1,000 leagues away.
He escaped me. I saved the city's inhabitants from becoming his slaves, but at the last minute he got away. He's in Northrend. Come with me.
Jaina closed her eyes. She did not want to remember that conversation of a day and a half ago. She did not want to remember how he looked, cold and angry and distant, fixated on killing this dreadlord, light, a demon, at the expense of everything else. She stumbled across the body, and her eyes snapped open again to the horror that the man she had loved, still did love, despite everything. How she could still love him after this, she did not know, but light save her, she did.
Arthas, it's a trap. He's a demon lord. If he was powerful enough to elude you in Stratholm, he will certainly defeat you in his own territory, where he is strongest. Don't go. Please.
She had wanted to throw herself into his arms, physically keep him there beside her. He couldn't go to Northrend. He would be going to his death. And although he had dealt out so much to others, Jaina found she could not wish for his.
So much death, she murmured. I can't believe Arthas could have done this.
And yet, she knew he had. A whole city.
Jaina? Jaina Proudmore!
Jaina started violently, snapped out of her sickened trance by the sound of the familiar voice. Uther. A strange feeling of relief swept over her as she turned in the direction of the hail. Uther had always intimidated her slightly. He was so large and powerful and, well, so deeply entrenched in the light. She recalled with an incongruously guilty flush how, when she and Arthas were younger, they used to make fun of Uther's piety, which to them verged on the pompous and sanctimonious behind the knight's back. He was a fairly easy target, but 3 excruciating days ago, she and Uther had both stood against Arthas.
You swore you would never deny me, Jaina,
Arthas accused, his voice sharp as an icy knife blade.
But when I most needed your support, your understanding, you turned against me.
Arthas, we didn't know enough to—
And now you refuse to aid me. I'm going to Northrend, Jaina. I would have you with me, to help me stop this evil.
Won't you come?
Jaina winced. Uther noticed, but said nothing. Clad in full plate armor despite the overwhelming heat of the unnaturally blazing fires, he strode swiftly toward her. His stature and presence was now a picture of strength and solidity rather than intimidation to her. He did not embrace her, but did grasp her arms reassuringly.
I thought I might find you here. Where has he gone, girl? Where has Arthas taken the fleet?
Jaina's eyes widened.
The fleet?
Uther grunted in affirmation.
He's commandeered the entire Lordaeron fleet and taken off with them. Sent only the briefest message to his own father. We don't know why they obeyed without direct orders from their commanders.
Jaina gave him a small, sad smile.
Because he's their prince. He's Arthas. They love him. They didn't know about this.
A flicker of pain crossed Uther's rugged features, and he nodded.
Aye, he said softly. He's always been good to the men who serve him. They can tell that he genuinely cares about them, and they'll serve him with their lives.
Regret laced the words. They were true insofar as they went, and once Arthas had deserved such undying devotion.
And now you refuse to aid me.
Uther shook her gently, bringing her back to the present.
Do you know where he might have taken them, child?
Jaina took a deep breath.
He came to me before he left. I pleaded with him not to go. I told him it sounded like a trap.
Where?
Uther was relentless.
Northrend.
He's gone to Northrend to hunt Mal'Ganis, the demon lord who is responsible for the plague. He couldn't defeat him.
Here.
A demon lord? Damn that boy!
The outburst startled Jaina.
I've got to inform Terranus.
I tried to stop him,
Jaina repeated.
Then,
and when he...
She gestured helplessly at the almost inconceivable number of dead that kept them silent company. She wondered, for the thousandth time, if she could have stopped it, if she had found the right words, touched Arthas the right way, if he would have been swayed.
But I failed. I failed you, Arthas. I failed these people. I failed myself.
Uther's heavy, gauntleted hand dropped on her slim shoulder.
Don't be too hard on yourself, girl.
She laughed humorlessly.
Is it that obvious?
Anyone with a heart would wonder the same. I know I do.
She glanced up at him, startled at the admission.
You do?
Jaina asked. He nodded, his eyes bloodshot from exhaustion, and there was a pain in those depths that struck her to the core.
I could not fight him. He is still my prince, but I wonder, could I have stood in his path, said something else, done something else?
Uther sighed and shook his head.
Perhaps, perhaps not. But that moment is in the past, and my choices cannot be undone. You and I must both look to the future now.
Jaina Proudmoore,
you had nothing to do with this slaughter.
Thank you for telling me where he has gone.
She lowered her head.
I feel like I've betrayed him again.
Jaina,
you may have saved him, and all the men who are going with him in ignorance of what he's become.
Startled at his choice of words, she looked up sharply.
What he's become? He's still Arthas,
Uther.
Uther's eyes looked haunted.
Aye, he is. But he made a dreadful choice, and one with repercussions we've yet to see played out. I don't know that he can come back from this.
Uther turned and eyed the dead.
We know the dead can be raised to unlife. That demons truly exist. Now I wonder if there are such things as ghosts, too. If there are, our prince will be 10 thick in them.
He bowed to her. Come away from this place, lady. She shook her head. No, not yet. I'm not ready. He searched her eyes, then nodded.
As you will. Light be with you, Lady Jaina Proudmoore.
And you, Uther the Lightbringer. She gave him the best smile she could muster and watched as he strode off. Arthas would no doubt see this as yet another betrayal, but if it saved his life, then she could live with that. The smell was starting to become more than even her stubborn will would permit her to handle. She paused for a last look. Part of her wondered why she had come here. The other part knew. She had come to brand these images into her brain, to understand the depth of what had happened. She must never, ever forget. Whether or not Arthas was past reaching, she didn't know. But what happened here would need to never become a footnote in the history books. A raven wheeled down slowly. She wanted to rush forward and shoo it away, to try to protect the poor, battered corpses, but it was only doing what its nature told it to do. It did not have a conscience to tell it that what it was doing was offensive to human sensibilities. She looked at the raven for a moment, and then her eyes widened. It began to shift, change, grow, and in an instant, where a carrion bird had once perched, stood a man. She gasped in recognition. This same prophet she had seen twice before.
You!
He inclined his head and gave her an odd smile that told her without words, I recognize you, too. This was the third time she had seen him, once when he was speaking with Antonidas, and once with Arthas. She had been invisible on both occasions, and clearly her invisibility spell had not fooled him for a moment. Either time.
The dead in this land might lie still for the time being, but don't be fooled. Your prince will find only death in the cold north.
His blunt words made her flinch slightly.
Arthas is only doing what he believes is right.
The words were true, and she knew it. Whatever his failings were, he had been utterly sincere in his belief that the purging of Strathol was the only option. The prophet's gaze softened.
Commendable as that may be, he said, his passions will be his undoing. It falls to you now, young sorceress.
What? Me?
Antonidas has dismissed me. Terranus and Arthas as well. Both rulers of men and masters of magic have turned their faces from true understanding. But I think you may not.
The aura of power around him was palpable. Jaina could almost see it, swirling about him, heady and strong. He stepped closer to her and placed his hand on her shoulder. She gazed up into his eyes, confused.
You must lead your people west, to the ancient lands of Kalimdor. Only there can you combat the shadow and save this world from the flame.
Staring into those eyes, Jaina knew he was right. There was no control, no compelling, just a knowing, deep and certain, and down to her bones. Swallowing hard, she took one last look at the horrors wrought by the man she loved and still did love, and nodded.
I will do as you say,
and leave my Arthas to the destiny he has chosen. There is no other way.
It will take time to gather them all, to make them believe me.
I do not know that you have that much time left.
So much of it has already been squandered.
Jaina lifted her chin.
I cannot go without trying. If you know so much about me, then surely you must know that.
The Raven Prophet seemed to relax marginally and smiled at her, squeezing her shoulder.
Do what you feel you must, but do not tarry over long. The hourglass empties swiftly, and delay could be deadly.
She nodded, too overcome to speak.
So many to talk to, Antonidas's chief among them. If he would listen to anyone, she thought, it would be her. She would bear witness for these dead, for the folly of not retreating to Kalimdor, while the living yet walked here.
The prophet's form dwindled and shifted, becoming once again that of the large black bird, and he flew off with a rustle of wings. And somehow, as it brushed her face, the wind from those black wings did not smell of carrion or smoke or death. It smelled clean and fresh. It smelled of hope. Chapter 14.
Northrend was the name of the land, Daggercap Bay, the site where the Lordaeron fleet made harbor. The water, deep and choppy with an unforgiving wind, was a cold blue-gray. Sheer cliffs were dotted with tenacious pine trees soaring upward, providing a natural defense of the small, flat area where Arthas and his men would make camp. A waterfall tumbled down, crashing in a billow of spray from a great height. It was, all in all, more pleasant a place than he had expected, at least for the moment, certainly not the obvious home for a demon lord. Arthas leaped from the boat and slogged onto the shore, his eyes darting about, absorbing everything. The wind, keening like a lost child, stirred his long blonde hair, caressing it with cold fingers. Beside him, one of the captains of the ships he had commandeered without consulting his father shivered and clapped his hands together, trying to warm them.
"This is a light-forsaken land, isn't it? You can barely even see the sun. This howling wind cuts to the bone, and you're not even shaking."
Vaguely surprised, Arthas realized that the man was right. He felt the cold, felt it knifing into him, but he did not tremble.
"My lord, are you all right?"
"Captain, are all my forces accounted for?"
Arthas didn't bother to answer the question. It was a foolish one. Of course he wasn't all right. He had been forced to slaughter the populace of an entire city in order to stop a worse atrocity. Jaina and Uther had both turned their backs on him. And a demon lord was awaiting his arrival.
"Nearly. There are only a few ships that..."
"Very well. Our first priority is to set up a base camp with proper defenses. There's no telling what's waiting for us out there in the shadows."
There, that would shut the man up and give him something to do. Arthas lent his assistance, working as hard as the men he commanded, to erect basic shelter. He missed Jaina's handiness with flames as they lit fires against the encroaching darkness and cold. Hell, he missed Jaina. But he would learn not to. She failed him when he most needed her, and he would not hold such people in his heart any longer. It needed to be strong, not soft. Determined, not aching. There was no place in it for weakness if he would defeat Mal'Ganis. There was no place in it for warmth.
The night passed without incident. Arthas stayed awake in his tent until the small hours of the morning, perusing what incomplete maps he had been able to find. When at last he fell asleep, he dreamed, and it was both joyous and nightmarish. He was again a youth, with everything in the world to look forward to,
riding the glorious white horse he so loved. Again, they were one, perfectly paired, and nothing would stop them.